welcome to today's episode of Biz Trends, where we delve into the dynamic intersection of branding, fintech, and digital identity. I'm your host, Bronwyn Williams, and today we're joined by someone who is no stranger to disruption and innovation, Heidi Patmore. Heidi is the founder and managing director of Manjaro Marketing, a consultancy that specializes in launching and scaling tech startups across Africa. With half a dozen tech startups under her belt over the last 5 years alone, Heidi knows better than anyone how brands can ride the waves of emerging tech. In this episode, we'll explore the future of brands in the age of digital wallets and digital identity, from who's talking about it, to what it means, to why it matters, and most importantly, what comes next. So if you're a marketer, a founder, or just a curious digital native, this conversation is for you. So, Heidi, over to you. You have been on the front lines of launching multiple tech startups all across our continent. From your vantage point, where is the demand and the driving force behind digital wallets and digital identities coming from? Is it coming from startups, from upstarts, from legacy brands, from the government, or is it coming from consumer demand itself?
Hi, Bronwyn. So thanks very much. I think that the demand is actually being driven by all four of those things. So they are converging together to drive the innovation in that space. I think from a consumer perspective, because I'm a marketer, so we always, you know, think of the consumer experience first. So I'll start there. There's obviously in Africa, there is a lack of service delivery, and we're not as sophisticated markets as Europe and Asia and the US. But we are catching up fast, and it's because consumers are demanding services that enable their lifestyles and make things easier for them. So I think that kind of drives all economies, is what does the end user need. So I think we always start there. Then there's certainly a lot of progressive regulation and initiatives from government, which are also driving that, because governments are seeing that the more that they can formalize digital identity and digital payments / digital wallets, it has a concrete effect on driving economy, driving jobs, and that sort of thing. So government initiatives, there's tons of government initiatives around that. And then in terms of legacy brands and startups, I think the startups are always bring like an element of innovation to the space. So startups are doing things that the legacy brands can't do, or they're doing them faster than what legacy brands can do. But if you were to think off the top of your head, who are the brands that do digital wallets? Most people will say Apple Pay, Samsung Pay. They'll talk about Google, which are all kind of like Western market concepts. But those are legacy brands that have just moved into the payment space and now use digital identity and digital wallets to enable those services. So, global legacy brands are talking about it. They have offerings now that they did not have 10 years ago, and it's because they're trying to change consumer behavior for the better and make things easier and simpler and more accessible for consumers. So I think it's driven by all four things. But at the end of the day, consumers are the ones who are going to benefit the most, because it's going to give people more access to the financial services that they need.
Okay, so let's take a bit of a step back for people who aren't familiar with all of these terms. Can you explain in simple terms what a digital wallet is and how it differs from other payment mechanisms that people are used to now?
Okay. So I think digital wallets have actually been around for a while, and most people probably don't know that the thing that they're using is called a digital wallet in the first place. Like, most people have heard of Apple Pay. Like, we all use, I mean, I certainly do. Like, I don't even carry a physical wallet anymore. Like, it sits at home. Like, I only carry an iPhone and I only use Apple Pay. And I've been sort of testing for the last, say, 4 years when I have ever needed cash. So I have, in 4 years, only needed cash once, and it was because a parking pay station machine didn't take card at 44 Stanley, which I had a massive issue with. But other than that, I have traveled to like almost every continent in the last 4 years. I have shopped at retail, I've shopped online, I've shopped day to day. There hasn't been a place where I haven't been able, like with one exception, if you think of how many payments you make every day, that I haven't been able to use Apple Pay, which is quite exceptional. Like, it's kind of strange that we can live like that now. And it's really interesting because consumer behavior and payments takes years to change. Like if you think about like we used to be able to pay by check. Now we don't even, checks aren't even legal in South Africa anymore. As they are in the States, because they're a little bit behind us, they don't have as sophisticated a financial sector as we do, which is quite nice to be able to say. We have a very forward-thinking and progressive central bank here, which is great. But a digital wallet is just a way to be able to store and use your payment in, a payment method digitally, so on a device. So a digital wallet is nothing more than just it can be an app, it can be a service, it can be a technology. But usually the point of a digital wallet is that you can make payments without a physical, something physical like a check or a card or cash. So that's what a digital wallet is. And that's sort of in the payment space. But there are also digital wallets that you can use to store, like it's an app, and you can store boarding pass information, or you can store in some cases, identity information. You can, like in some markets, you can actually store your legal identity in a digital wallet. Tickets to shows, transport cards, that sort of thing. So digital wallets have a range of uses. I think that probably the one that people understand the most in the Western world is Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay. And then, of course, you know, like the kinds of things that they have in Asia, like WeChat and WeChat Pay and Alipay. So that is... A digital wallet is simply a way to be able to pay for something using a mobile device or an internet-connected device. What was your second question?
Yeah, and then you mentioned, of course, digital identity. So what does that digital identity actually mean? Is it just about more secure logins, or is it something more transformative? What is digital identity as the bigger picture? So the wallet, of course, contains your information, your credentials, your access passes, whether it be your access to credit or your access to an event. But what is digital identity as the kind of bigger picture here?
So I think... first of all, we need to think about why we need digital identity. Like if you think like 200 years ago, we didn't even have passports. Like if you wanted to immigrate to America from Ireland, you just got on a boat and you went. Like there was no passport control. There was no, like you didn't even have to present a certificate or anything. Like people made stuff up and crossed the border. And now in today's world, we live in a like a hypervigilant society where like, you know, like we are, you know, monitored to within an inch of our lives and, you know, across every social platform and every piece of internet software we use. But digital identity is important. And let me maybe start what it is. It's just a way to prove who you are, that you are who you say you are in a digital environment. So if you are logging into your account, it's a username, like your bank account, it's a username and password. That's like technically your digital identity. Some services have had to take that further, like, you know, like if you are entitled to a social grant, for example, it's very important to the government who is serving 18 million, you know, recipients of social grants that those social grant recipients are entitled to that grant. Mm. Many of whom don't have a passport, don't have an ID book or whatever. So they've had to find ways to verify that someone is who they say they are, because they're to check that they're entitled to something. Because I'm going to get to fraud in a minute, because that's kind of like what this all hinges on, is because when you don't have secure digital identity and you don't have, well, digital wallets you can kind of get away with, but without secure digital identity, it's very difficult to check whether someone is who they say they are. Because I'll give you an example of a remittance company that I work with, and they do, so you download this app so you can send money home to Zimbabwe, and there's regulation in place that says, you know, like you have to report to the SARB what money is going in and out the country. Like as a financial service provider, you are obliged to report on who is, you know, who is moving money around. You know, there's lots of regulations around that. And we once had a case where we all had a good giggle about it, where you know, because in the back end, our customer care team could show us like who was registering on the app to send money to Zimbabwe. And one of our customer care people one day like posted on the Slack group, guys, look at this chancer trying to send money. This is clearly a fake identity, because the method is scan a picture of your ID or passport in order to prove who you are. So it's like a analog scanned to digital. And for many financial services, that's perfectly fine. Like you can... if you can verify that that copy of the ID is the right ID, it's fine. Anyway, we all had a good laugh because the photo on the ID was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh,
so it was like the first real, like, like it was a totally fake ID. But, you know, if you're going to fake an ID, like use someone anonymous. And it was Leonardo DiCaprio. So we were like, okay. So the thing is that, you know, people are trying to defraud the system and people are trying to hide how money is. Like, it's a big problem. Like, fraud is a massive problem in the world. So solid digital identity that will help financial services providers prove, like be able to account to say that this person was, this is just someone who's working and wants to send money home. And that's it. And we can prove it by this. Digital identity is important for that because, you know, if you're a startup who is not vetting every customer, you'll get shut down. Like, there's just, you know, like, it opens up all sorts of challenges. So digital identity is just a way that you as a consumer can prove that you are who you say you are. And there's many ways of doing that. And there's quite innovative ways that companies in the digital identity space are trying to achieve that, which I can talk to you about in a minute. But yes, it's just, you know, instead of whipping out your smart ID or a paper passport or something like that, digital ID is simply being able to prove who you are in some sort of digital manner.
Great. So from your perspective, do you have any examples or case studies as to how brands, businesses, fintechs are starting to integrate digital wallets and digital identities into their services? So maybe some more specific examples that our audience might be familiar with already in their day-to-day lives.
So I think that where digital identity and digital wallets are starting to be integrated into like the brands, like sort of old school brands that you wouldn't expect it from, is in retail. So like, I think retail and e-commerce, it's happening. So for example, Walmart now has a digital wallet so that their customers can basically verify themselves and also store funds in a digital wallet so that when they shop at Walmart, it's all integrated. And of course, Walmart is a data-driven organization. So the reason why they're doing that is so that they can verify, like, they have such solid data now on this customer. It's even backed by government ID, as well as every, you know, like, if they can convince everyone to do transactions digitally, they know more about the consumer. And then they, you know, like, the level of personalization that they're getting to because they have that data is just insane. So I think we've seen big brands like Walmart start to integrate it like that. I think that I haven't really seen like mainstream brands really start to, other than like being able to issue digital vouchers, like that's kind of standard stuff. Like, so if you want a digital voucher, many brands have the opportunity, like issue digital gift cards and that sort of thing. And a lot of brands are using, it's not a digital wallet specifically, but like this voucher code system where like gaming credits, for example. So you load your, like you have a credit card, it loads your Roblox account with Robux and stuff like that. So a lot of the gaming industry is particularly forward thinking with that in terms of like, they want to make sure you can get your Robux, you know, like, so they are making sure that that what they are building is, serves that. But not so much like, you know, I think that like the like mostly brands in the financial services and payment space are very forward thinking like that. But normal old school brands are still getting there unless they're forward thinking like Walmart. Yeah, so I think that's the, I'm just trying to think if there's another example that I wanted to say. No, can't think of anything.
But what about the actual opportunities and risks to brands who have not yet got into the space when it comes to digital wallets and digital identities? Given that, of course, trust and privacy are such massive concerns, but also, of course, brands are trying to find more ways to connect with customers in a very fragmented digital environment. So what are some of the best practice principles that you could advise brands when it comes to dabbling with these sorts of technologies? What are the risks? What are the rewards? And what should they be paying attention to?
So I think the thing that we see in the payments industry in general and in consumer behavior is the three pillars that brands need to ensure are rock solid in terms of their communications, the way that they interact with customers is like that their brand is trusted. So if a consumer trusts your brand, they're more likely to try an app with digital services and digital wallet and digital identity functionality. But they have to trust your brand first. So if you have like, I mean, we see it with startups all the time, like they have such good ideas and they go to market and then the app is glitchy and it just erases it erases consumer trust. So then they don't, like, they get no traction because people are like, oh, no, that thing didn't work so well. So now I don't know if I trust you, right? You know, like, even, like, if you look at Checkr 6060, for example, which is, like, you know, super forward-thinking and digital, and now you're, you know, like, you've got a wallet within the app and everything like that, you'll see that when people get, like, a packet of lettuce that isn't super fresh, like, they like, go and write bad reviews on the app store. So, like, they'll rate the app at one, but it had nothing to do with the technology or the functionality or anything like that. They were unhappy with their bad lettuce, you know? So, like, you have to have that, like, in every single touch point that you interact with your consumer, you have to build trust, even if it's not related to digital wallet, right? Because it will affect that. Then the second thing is user experience. So in your digital wallet experience, you need to have a good user experience in terms of your app journey flow and that sort of thing. Like a good example of a bad user experience when you need to be refunded or you're unhappy with something is Uber. Like, they just have such a terrible complaints process in their app where it's, like, so regimented and you can't really explain what went wrong or why you were unhappy. But, and then you just get, like, this random thing that says we've credited you $10 and, like, but you don't know when it's going to come off your next order and things like that. Like, there's just, they have tons of trust, but they have a terrible user experience, like, when it comes to actually implementing the thing that they are trying to convince you to do. And then the third thing is that it's got to be seamless. So across every touch point, across every experience, like, even, like, you can trust the brand, you can have a great UX, and then if, like, you need to verify on the FNB app when you're trying to make a transaction here, and that thing that, like, when they talk to each other, it's glitchy and ugly, and they've used a terrible font, and you actually don't know how long it's going to take, and you're like, how long is this? And then it doesn't bounce you back to the app. Like, it can't be fragmented and not great to use. It has to be seamless. Like, it has to be end-to-end, builds that trust, builds that user experience. And then people are more likely to adopt that technology because people, like, if it's bad, they just won't do it. And, you know, like, digital payments are the way forward. Digital wallets, I think, you know, well, certainly to everyone who has internet access and can access digital services, it's a game changer. Like we should be doing more of that. For brands, it's like the level of data that you can get if your consumers switch to that method of transacting or storing their funds, it's a game changer for brands in terms of how consumers behave. So, like, we want that.
So let's talk about loyalty and ownership when it comes to digital identity, digital wallet space. You've spoken about your wallets or your sort of payment app that brands could, in theory, control. But is that really how it's playing out? Where does control and loyalty lie in the new digital wallets economy? So if we look back at sort of like the iPhone era, we had every brand and its mother and its dog and its cat and its sister getting you to download an app so you could try and own that consumer data in the app. When we talk now about digital wallets, there's kind of a payments layer that comes into that too. So are we seeing brands and retailers effectively kind of becoming banks or taking on some bank and fintech functionality when we start to layer the payments into that brand ecosystem space? Or are we seeing brands and retailers now plugging and playing external platform type technology like your Apple Pays? And what does that mean for where and who gets to own and control that customer data identity going forward? What is the sort of platform risk and what's within brands' control?
That's a very complex question, Ryan. But okay, I'll try and answer
that. Brief answer.
So there's so many options out there. So there's so many ways that you can do it. And yes, you know, like retail brands are trying to own that consumer journey and own them end to end. I mean, I think and the legacy banks are obviously trying to like keep everything with them, and the you know, Visa, MasterCard, the EMV companies are also trying to keep with them. Everyone wants to like own that and keep it within. Like they don't want to share. Okay. The introduction overseas of open finance is to some extent helping to level the playing field a little bit because, to be honest, whoever owns the data is owning the customer and can make the most money out of them. So, like, it's very, like, there's a lot riding on this in terms of who owns it and who benefits from this. From the, so yes, there's, I mean, of course, retailers can go and try and be their own bank or whatever, but it's actually, depending on the market that you're in, quite complex from a regulatory perspective. So it's not like a retailer can't just decide to be a bank. Like, you know, they can't just decide we're going to bank our consumers now. You can't actually do it unless you have a banking license. So generally what companies who want to kind of own more data or want more transparency in the data, they work with partners, and the partners are usually fintechs, and those fintechs are aggregators to the information that's moving around. So like payment gateways, for example. So I don't see bigger companies trying to own the data themselves. I think that regulation will drive data sharing to make it more of a level playing field. I think it'll take years for that to happen, and it won't happen overnight. I think that will benefit consumers ultimately. So the fact that you can, you know, if you give permission for your data to be shared across different players, you get more benefits, for example. So, and that applies to transactions, payments, but also credit access, like access to credit or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think that partnerships are probably where it's going to land. So then specialist financial services providers will be the partner or the platform provider to different brands, which is also efficient and more competitive. So I think that's where it's going to land up.
Okay, so let's like zoom in a little bit on our own continent in Africa. And let's talk about where you are seeing, given that you do work literally with African startups that are playing and foreigners in the space, where are we seeing the most momentum? Why are we seeing momentum in those places? And then what are the opportunities for the African continent to do like it's done, like you've spoken about earlier so many times before, leapfrog this space, this intersection now between fintech and brand, which is kind of the new frontier of digital and financial adoption?
Yeah. So when we look at Africa, it's not homogenous, right? No. So we have like the top four markets, which are South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Egypt, who like kind of operate a little bit like first world or Western markets because they're just in a different economic situation, infrastructure situation, internet connectivity situation, GDP situation. So they operate quite differently from the rest of the continent. And then, to be honest, there's a lot of similarities with all the countries in between, even if they're French-speaking or English-speaking. The consumers, the way that things work is quite similar. Like, there's not that much difference in terms of, like, daily life. In terms of digital and digital identity and digital wallets having the most impact, there's two ways it could impact. One is in the more sophisticated markets, increasing digital payments to everyone in the population would be what we want in Africa. The barrier is connectivity, though. So in markets where you've got ubiquitous connectivity, you can have that. But what we forget is that 76% of the continent doesn't have internet access. So when you go to rural areas, like I'll give you an example. Like a few years ago, I went to Mozambique with a client, and we were going into, honestly, the sticks. Like I flew to Maputo. I drove 3 hours to a village. Then we drove like another hour and a half into the Bundu, like where we onboarded people under a mango tree to like with digital identity, with their biometrics. And I couldn't, it was the first time I'd ever gone anywhere in the world where like the soonest I could look at my Instagram was a 3 hour drive away. And I think we don't realize that we forget the scale of Africa and how vast it is. And that we have like if you look at the lights at night, of Africa, you have like pockets of like light, and then there's dark, and you forget that there's like no electricity and no internet connectivity in those places, and that's 1 billion people. So like the number of people who are living there that don't have access to that are, it's so remote that it's 1 billion people, which is a massive market. So I think that the biggest opportunity on the continent is banking the unbanked in that 1 billion people. And they also don't have ID. So I think 790 million don't have ID. So many people live in a village and they've never left the village in their life. They will never leave the village. And they do not need a passport and they do not need identity. But without that, they can't have access to credit. So one of my clients, my long-term clients, Paycode, they specialize in giving biometric digital identity to people who have never had identity before. And why it's clever is because they came up with the idea that we don't need a proof of residence to prove who this person is. Like, we need a fingerprint. and we need to verify that fingerprint every time they transact. So that's the whole, and you don't, doesn't cost you anything to give someone your fingerprint. You don't need a card. You can scan a POS. You need infrastructure, so you need POS machines. You scan your fingerprint and you can transact without being able to speak a language, understand what's going on the POS. Like you trust the merchant is going to tell you, or you like familiar, like the process is so simple and familiar that you trust that that's going to happen. And so, you know, those billion people need a digital identity method that's not a barrier to them. Like there is no proof of residence when you live in a hut under a mango tree. Like there's no, but this is how the global financial system is structured. We know who you are because we know where you live. That's nonsense. Like a billion people in Africa can't have that, you know? Mm. Whereas biometric identity, your biometric is the same from the day that you're born to the day that you die. And it's cheap. Like it's very cheap to biometrically register someone as a form of digital ID. Then the second barrier, I guess, is internet connectivity. So I think that we are going to see a massive improvement in, you know, like hopefully we get that number of 76% of the continent unconnected to like down to like 5% if we get Starlink everywhere, which is hopefully what we get. But what we see in economies is as soon as an African country has ubiquitous connectivity from top to bottom, the economy just shoots up. Like you see an overnight increase in economic activity, access to services and all of that kind of thing. And it's the startups, not the big companies. So like, I think, you know, M-Pesa was an exception back in the day when they managed to basically take airtime trading and make it into payments, into M-Pesa. That was really clever. And that did leapfrog in Africa. But, you know, that still requires that there's cell phone towers in the village under the mango tree, which it's like they will never build that because it's too sparsely populated. So satellite internet connectivity could solve that. Startups going after that billion, you know, underserved people and giving them biometric identity that they never have to have a piece of paper. They don't need to have a passport. Like they have a fingerprint and now you're identifiable forever. And then having a way, like until we have ubiquitous connectivity, we need offline transactions, which is also a massive barrier and very few people can do it. But if we get that right, we can have ubiquitous identity and transactions through digital wallets or whatever it is available to a billion people. And that will unlock the entire continent. So that is really what I would like to see. So I think that would be a game changer. Like, there isn't another market in the world that's sitting on a billion unlocked market potential, a billion people.
So you've clearly outlined the opportunity there, but now you are a brand, you are a business sitting in South Africa or somewhere on the African continent. What do you have to do to start playing in this space? And what do you need to be aware of that you shouldn't do? In other words, what are the common mistakes that brands make when they try and wade into this a great big new wide open playing field? And what should they be doing conversely?
So any brand that's going into Africa has to not look at it as going into Africa. You have to go market by market. So what's going to work in Botswana is not necessarily going to work in Mozambique. So I think any brand that's looking to expand into the continent, yes, the opportunity is there. You really need to have a very strong understanding of what the market dynamics are in that specific market. Even in countries like Zambia, like one side of the country behaves differently from the other side of the country. Like, well, people who live near rivers versus people who farm, it's like it's a very different consumer behavior. They have different challenges. So understanding the market, doing your market research, like going and finding the experts that know, like on the ground, what is going on in that market is really, really important. So going in with a very strong understanding of how that market works. And it's okay to take time to do that. And then what we've seen is that there's lots of players. So like, you know, there's lots of opportunity, like going like partnerships and finding partnerships and route to market through other brands that have successfully done something there can be very successful. Like even in Zim, like EcoBank, like you get into EcoBank, you access the entire market, you know. So if you can partner with brands that are successful there and they're very open to it, you're more likely to succeed. And then understanding the regulation in that particular environment, like in the 14 least developed markets in Africa, they do not have regulation around identity. Okay, so the 14 like poorest countries don't have a Home Affairs office don't issue passports and have no way of ID. They have no national register. I mean, that's least developed markets, right? So, you know, you can't be like, oh, gung-ho, we're going to go serve Sudan. And meanwhile, you know, like there is no, you can have as much internet connectivity as you like, but no one is identified because the infrastructure doesn't exist in the country, you know? So I think that, yeah, like do your market research before you land. Like, and there's lots of experts. Like there's lots of people, like the people on the ground know. Like they will tell you everything that's going on with their consumers and going on with their market. And this guy, you need to chat to this guy and this guy does that thing. That's how it works in Africa. Like you must know a guy, you know? Partnerships and then also just understanding and respecting the regulation. And the risks, like there's risks, you know, I mean, even big players like MTN got clucked in Nigeria, like, and there's theoretically, like, it's a great market for a telecoms company to operate, but, you know, now you've operated, you've succeeded, and now you still have some barriers in terms of making your business successful. So I think you just got to go in eyes open, but certainly for brands that are prepared to take risk, there is big reward.
Okay, so you clearly know the space. Now we're going to ask you the hard question, which we try and end with, which is, what are your biggest predictions, or even just singular prediction, as to how digital identity and digital wallets are going to change the shape of brands and retail across our continent over the next 10 years?
If I say AI, will you kick me off the show?
Well, you have to elaborate a bit further. AI is not enough. It could be part of
an answer. Is AI not the answer to every question like that these days? So, no, I think I have a bit more of an intelligent answer to that. So, I think, you know, it's difficult to predict anything, but what is interesting, and the answer is AI, is that there's so much innovation in terms of tech innovation that's happening. And yes, it's AI, but it's also blockchain. And blockchain has historically been, it was like the sexy innovation 10 years ago, hasn't really delivered on the promise and the vision of what it was supposed to achieve. However, because it's now been around for 10 years, the financial markets, regulators are starting to wake up. Like it was just too early at the time to actually have any impact on anything. But the technology is still a game changer if it fits in, if it plays well with financial services and regulation, okay? So, and it's also well suited to support and grow both digital identity and digital wallets. So I think that, and a really interesting thing now is that, so you've got really cool technology. You've got digital wallets, you've got digital identity, then you've got blockchain, which has kind of been like not really smashing the lights out, but it's a good technology if it's done properly. And then you've got AI, which is like just in the last 18 months exploded, and like it's accelerating in innovation at such a fast pace that like no one is keeping up. Like the way that ChatGPT updates everything every 3 days and does it like 10 times better than 3 days ago, like just the pace of innovation in AI is just, I don't think we have any idea how fast that's going to change things. And I think the exciting thing for digital identity and digital wallets is going to be the amalgamation or convergence of these technologies together. So it's not going to be that digital wallets is particularly groundbreaking. But when you combine digital wallets, identity, crypto / blockchain and AI, like if I had to predict, I would say that's the thing. Like that, if someone comes up with the thing that can leverage all of those things properly within a regulatory environment so it's safe for consumers. I think that, and I don't know what it's going to look like, but I think it's going to be a thing. Like I think, you know, already we've seen, we have one client who's recently come to us and they've invented something called, they were a blockchain company, so they have their own proprietary blockchain, Clever. When I last spoke to them a year ago, it was like a whole, like blockchain, okay, cool, you're going to launch a coin. Then literally 6 months later, their very smart engineers came up with like, oh, and we found an AI that we can integrate into the blockchain. And now we're going to launch smart markets. And I was like, what even is that? Like, I've never heard that term. And then they explained it to me. And I was like, you know, literally what they've built is that they're called AI block or A block. And they are going to be able to run marketplaces on the blockchain that bring in digital identity, digital wallets, with AI in the background that has agents that go and, you know, like market making and all of that kind of stuff and predict and also
scalp.
Yeah, and execute and execute and tell a farmer in Brazil that he needs to put his price up of coffee beans by this amount because there's, you know, like I think We have no idea what it looks like, but it's coming. And I think that, you know, in this digital identity payment space and digital wallets, I think the amalgamation of those innovations and technologies is going to just change things so drastically for the better, but so fast and hopefully in a good way for brands and consumers.
Well, that is a lot to chew on. So that's a wrap for today's episode. A huge thank you to Heidi for sharing her wisdom on how digital wallets and digital identities are and will reshape the African branding and retail landscape. From creating more inclusive financial systems to building smarter, more secure customer journeys, it's clear that we're entering a whole new era of consumer engagement and market opportunity. If this conversation got you thinking or rethinking your brand strategy, be sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on Wrapped BizTrends TV. You can also catch us on Biz Community's official site, The Real Network, YouTube, and of course on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So on behalf of myself, Bronwyn Williams, my guest Heidi, and the team here at Biz Community, along with our partners at Wrapped Creative, thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you next time with more insights into the future of Afro-global trends.